Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the heart of liberal Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Best friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Now here are your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, we are joined right now live via Zoom by a fine journalist. He is David Weigel, national political correspondent with the Washington Post. We'd like to think he's a friend of ours. Keeps coming around. We appreciate you doing so, David.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Now, David, I learned from checking your Twitter, you were not at the big CPAC conference. You weren't there in your role as an enemy of the people this weekend.
No.
What do you think you missed, David?
I think I missed less than had I missed the other CPAC this year. And this isn't new. I mean, there was a while when, under different leadership, the American Conservative Union that organized CPAC was having one in D.C. and then a Western CPAC, which just never got organized very well. It was kind of I knew one person who went and just came back saying, never come. It just was not very well organized. But they're a tighter ship now. And they've also, importantly, become more of just a pro-Trump organization. And that with that comes an ability to make guess how many people are going to show up if you put on a conference. So I didn't miss a lot of new stuff. I have noticed since the beginning of the year, and the first CPAC was in March, a big theme of that conference was questioning the 2020 election. That was still part of this. You had a larger role, and I'm looking at the panels, the things that I didn't watch them all, but the things I knew were happening, kind of catching up on. You had a lot more interest in what are children being taught and some other Biden priorities, but not really, it's still not a movement really organizing against what Biden's trying to pass in Congress. And that is why, as a reporter, I look at it and say, well, that could still work. You could still have a pretty good election in 2022 without ever attacking this stuff. But you have increasingly the separation between, which you didn't have in 2009, between conservative protests and grassroots energy and what is happening in D.C. What it means is that if let's say there were protests in Ron Kind's district every week saying, Ron Kind, don't vote for the infrastructure bill. He's in a Trump, I think, plus two or plus four seat. He might have something to worry about. But that's not really happening. Instead, it's protests about these larger things that conservatives see kind of working their way through American politics. And they're not necessarily happening in Congress. They're just things like what school boards are up to and what election clerks are up to.
David, the CPAC back in 2016, I looked at the straw poll, and yeah, it was Ted Cruz won 40%. And as I recall, Trump was sort of disinvited himself, only received about 15% of the support in the straw poll at the 2016 CPAC. So can you address this evolution or perhaps de-evolution of the Republican Party, or at least those that would attend a conference like this? I mean, they're all in for Trump. Mm-hmm. 98% approval, and he overwhelmingly won the straw poll.
Yeah, and some of the crowd has changed, not too much. I mean, there are conservatives who make everybody aware that they used to be Republicans and they can't be because of Trump for whatever reason. Generally, what happened with CPAC attendees, these conservative activists, are, how would I put it, is that they were skeptical of Trump because they didn't think he would govern the way a Ted Cruz would. And he did, so they were happy. And that's one reason that Trump, won Wisconsin once and didn't win the second time. He governed more to the right than he ran in 2016. This is one of, I guess this might be controversial. Some people, I don't think it is. I mean, Donald Trump in 2016 was making sure, promising people he wasn't going to touch Medicaid, Social Security, et cetera. He ended up appointing judges that were approved by the conservative movement. And so you saw things connect. You also saw the attitude of Trump carry over at whether or not successful. I mean, you see this discussion on the right that, well, Trump was great because he fought, and a lot of Republicans back down. They don't fight. You know, you've seen Scott Walker in action for a long time. The idea that Republicans have just been surrendering and not fighting on anything, on labor, cultural issues, taxes, that's alien to me. But the idea with Trump is that he's so boisterous and he attacks the media as part of this, that attitude is really popular on the right. I mean, there just were so many people showing up to CPACs for years who wished there was a Republican president who really gave it back to the media, really made fun of how you know, stupid we were, how liberal, et cetera, et cetera. The whole fake news conversation. And that, I think, has been really elemental for a lot of conservatives, just having somebody who finally delivered on that. Now, he could deliver on winning again. But the idea there, too, is, well, he should have won again. Something else happened. The idea is not just that Trump, by being so much himself and picking fights and insulting people, not just that it was fun, but that it was also politically successful. Those are both reasons why conservatives who didn't used to like him are so happy with him now.
So he delivers liberal tears.
Yes, liberal tears. That's a good way to put it.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. David Weigel, national political correspondent with the Washington Post, joining us. David, great to talk to you again. In talking about the 2009 movement, the Tea Party movement, and, mm-hmm. and you know, policies versus personalities, I guess. And I want to get your take on that. From what was going on then, I look at you know, these grassroots, perhaps it started out as a grassroots kind of a movement, perhaps overtaken by American for Prosperity and other right-wing groups. But they were pushing back specifically on the ACA, a policy issue. And if we look at now, and united against, you know, united as a party against a president, a Democratic president, and a policy that he was proposing and pushing forward. Versus what we see now is seemingly just a cult of personality to me. That's how I'm looking at this, David. I mean, we saw Joe Biden pass executive orders last week, you know, calling for greater, you know, government regulation on businesses. Was that even brought up at CPAC? It seems mm-hmm. like they're getting away from that. I guess, what's your sense of how, I guess, ingrained that is as far as motivation for them? It seems a little less... It is a little more tepid, perhaps, than the AstroTurf movement from 2009 that at least had Obama and the ACA to focus on versus right now, pure personality. What do you think?
There's a little bit of that. And so what I hear from Republican strategists, not all of whom are at CPAC, is that, yes, it doesn't sound like there's one issue that's carrying them to power. And it's more a emphasis on liberal weaknesses. Things used to be better under Trump and liberals took over and they're more chaotic. You know, things cost more money. Countries respect us less. Things. It's kind of a combination of issues all tied to how just liberals don't know how to govern. And that can touch on anything. It can be kind of unfocused. It can be, as you see with the critical race theory stuff, not an issue that Biden ever talks about, but just the idea there is that the liberals are running things and we need to fight back because they've taken control of everything while conservatives were sleeping. So you're right. You didn't hear a lot there specifically about things that he had done, regulatory actions he'd taken. And part of the reason is that a lot of conservatives now, even if they haven't conceived of how to do it, think that it's important for the government to use its power to crack down on corporate power. Again, there are some people who have a version of a plan. There are some people who propose something, but it's not a bill. It's kind of an idea. But still, that attitude makes it tough to look at a Biden executive order and on that sort of space and say, I'm against that because the executive orders are bad. You didn't hear that. You heard more, the overreach you heard more about was, or I guess the idea of an overreach you heard more about was that this idea of grassroots, you know, people working with the government, but non-doctors, non-federal agents going door-to-door to encourage people to get the vaccine, to connect them with a way to get it. You saw condemnation of that. And what you've seen a lot of is blurring what's actually happening to say this is the government sending federal agents, forcing you to take the vaccine. If they can do that, they can take their guns away. So you saw, just from what was getting a reaction, because I was monitoring a lot, I had a colleague, Hannah, there that I was watching her stuff. And I was watching panels when I could and catching up. That definitely got more of a reaction than some of the business stuff. Now, there is an idea. It's not like there's no economic argument. It is that Biden spent a lot of money and inflation is happening now. That is there. It's gas prices are up. That's very coherent, but it's not quite the thing that gets people active. It's not one thing. It's not Biden did this and that's why this we need to undo it. It's Biden is in charge of the collapse of everything we love about our country. That's more of how it goes.
David, the state of media in this country, certainly taking a beating under the former guy. Here in Milwaukee, I know there's some fundraising going on to start some new media companies, and I see that kind of happening in fits and spurts around the country. What's your take on how the media has reacted to the covering of Donald Trump, and where do you think journalism goes here in the next 4 years?
That's a very big question, and I think there are debates about not that. The Post is always part of, for example, Washington Post. I mean, I think there have been discussions, I know, in some news organizations about whether to put, for example, Trump live on TV if he speaks. Now, that was kind of a no-brainer when he was president for people. For a lot of networks, it was a no-brainer when he was a candidate because it was good ratings. And you see that just the way that he himself he's covered, I think that's changed. The overall way we cover politics, journalists aren't really driving this. It's more conservative activists and their relationship to the media. So one thing you found as any reporter covering politics, you sometimes discover is that there are people who don't want to talk to you. Maybe they would have 10 years ago, but they've learned not to trust the media for whatever reason. But they will go on kind of a podcast or a YouTube show or something like that and really kind of unload. And Ron Johnson does both Sunday shows. But then if you go on when he goes on some radio in Wisconsin, those are the ones that make news when he gets into the zone where he's talking to somebody who agrees with them. And I think that has changed. That's a very small way in which some things have changed. But as a reporter, and I've been around for a while, and there are people who find me annoying on Twitter or find something I wrote annoying. But I think even just generally, I know reporters who don't have that, don't have a brand, or they're not known, but they're having more trouble talking to some conservative activists. I've covered folks in the far left who don't want to be photographed, who don't want the reporters to talk to them. This is something with Antifa, which is far left, whatever it manifests. I've not seen that level of get your camera out of my face, shoving your camera out of my face, but that attitude that it's not up to the media to cover what's happening in our movement because they're going to lie about it. I think about that a lot. And CPAC, you have one display for hours and hours over days to kind of see what's happening. And sometimes you do learn more than you would have just interviewed people because they're going to be hostile with if you try to ask questions about them or what they believe, what they want to do. There's, unfortunately, because I think just explain what people want to do politically and see if it's true, that's enough for most stories. Unfortunately, it ends up closing off a form of communication where because people are worried that the press is not going to cover them in a way they like, they just don't talk to us. And it's been not the biggest problem in the world, but something I've had to work through covering both sides in politics.
Well, David Weigel, we appreciate you not being one of those kind of guests. Thank you so much. David Weigel,
no, thank you.
National political correspondent, The Washington Post. Stick around. More Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot, guys.